Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for coming along this afternoon. We're still waiting for one of our panelists to join us. We've got, as you know, a presentation today by the Director of European Real Estate for Amazon. Amazon, obviously, a big driver in the way things are changing in the digital universe and e-commerce, and that is having, in turn, an impact on all areas of real estate going forward. A lot of people probably still regard this as something to think about in the future, you know, it's not at the top of their intray, but beware of the future, because this is moving very fast, and it's going to change things very quickly, much more quickly than green, in my opinion. We've got two panels today. First of all, Raymond Peitzman from Amazon keynoting on the first panel. We're dodging each other. On the first panel, we've got some business leaders from across the sector, developers, investors, and asset managers, looking at the impact on what we call the tenant picture, so the influence on actual the bricks and mortar and tenant demand and supply issues around this, how it's going to affect that. And then after the tea break, we have a second panel, which is mainly centered around the financial questions of investment and finance and how it's going to impact on all of that. And then after that, we have the secret MIPIM reception just across the way, in the Deep Design restaurant, where we are going to announce the shortlist for this year's Seeker Awards and the winners of this year's Real Green Awards. I would now like to hand over to Raymond Peitzman to take you forward with his keynote presentation.
Just need to see. Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. So I appreciate that we have so many people here in the audience. It's always a difficult meeting after the lunch. People tend to stay in the restaurants and enjoy the sun outside. So the more I'm pleased that we have you here. So I'm in charge of real estate for fulfillment centers and customer service centers in EMEA. I'm with Amazon, I think, just a little bit about the background, because I really started 1999 as one of the first European ones in Amazon, and I've been there for 2.5 years. Then it was the time when the bubble tended to burst a little bit, the entire e-commerce, and there was also in our world and not so much expansion anymore. And I said, you know, my business is expansion. I appreciate it. I'm leaving. Then I left and was with Union Investment for 3 years. And then they called me back and said, no, we are growing. Would you like to come back? So we have 29 fulfillment centers in EMEA and 4 customer service centers. And I've done 27 of the fulfillment centers and all the customer service centers. So quite some experience in the expansion. So I want to start with a little exercise, because we're not an exercise, don't worry. But there's always so much talk, what is standard, you know, about warehouse and in the logistic market. People have certain expectations how a warehouse should look like. And if you think about, you know, just imagine you have the standard warehouse, what are you thinking about? I guess, hope this works now. What is the next one? The green one. And I guess you're not thinking about something like that. And I find it very interesting that you say in a time, 120, 140 years, so that's the port of Hamburg, and one building is close to Bristol in the UK. And I guess at this time, where you had no vertical transportation system, they went multi-level, multi-story buildings. And it's quite amazing that in the moment we think, you know, the big warehouse, 100,000 square meters, is the only way to do it, while we have much more possibilities with vertical transportation. I want to
think about this. I very frequently get the question, what's going to change in the next 10 years? And that is an interesting question. It's a very common one. I almost never get the question, what's not going to change in the next 10 years? And I submit to you that second question is actually the more important of the two. Because you can build a business strategy around the things that are stable in time. And so, as you pointed out, in our retail business, we know that customers want low prices. And I know that's going to be true 10 years from now. They want fast delivery. They want vast selection. It's impossible to imagine a future 10 years from now where a customer comes up to me and says, Jeff, I love Amazon, I just wish the prices were a little higher. You know how I love Amazon, I just wish you delivered a little more slowly. Impossible. And so the effort that we put into those things, spinning those things up, we know the energy we put into it today will still be paying dividends for our customers 10 years from now. And so those, when you have something that you know is true, even over the long term, you can afford to put a lot of energy into it. On AWS...
This was too quick now, I had no chance to introduce it. Actually, I just thought it's a very interesting quote, and it's maybe more interesting for you and more valid if it comes from our founder and CEO, Jeff Bezos. That's the reason why I included this, and I think it's a very fair point to think about what is not going to change, and that's definitely something what is not going to change. So I think talking about the theme today is digital revolution, and it's probably a little bit more. If you talk about what is going to happen, so we have certain cycles in the world history, what is going to happen. So the last biggest change was actually the mass production. And the interesting part is this time it was just, you know, to deliver goods for affordable price to the mass. And there was this famous quote from Ford introduced, and when he introduced the T model, and he said any customer can have a car painted any color that he wants to, so long as it is black. So that was the philosophy at this time. And it was really that the customers were treated as an anonymous mass and just in a return for an affordable mass product. So, but what is going to change is basically that the customer is getting much more mature. So almost everyone has everything what he wants to have. He has a car, he has a TV screen, maybe three or four or five. So the industry has to look what else to come, and also the customer want to have more. So the customer is not happy anymore if you give him a T model with the same color. He wants to have a different thing. And that's e-commerce is actually enabling us to be in permanent contact with the customer and work in close connection. What is actually the requirement from the customer? And I have, that's the last one. I promise you everything else is, but I think it's also an interesting one. About something, what is shifting.
You see it on Facebook, you see it anywhere that customers can talk, discussion boards, about products and services. Let's put it this way. If in the old days you might be best advised to put 30% of your energy and effort into building a great product or service, and then 70% of your effort and energy into shouting about that service, that has flipped around. And basically the balance of power is shifting from the, you know, the providers of services, the providers of offerings, to the consumers of offerings. And I believe that's a great thing for society. I even believe it's a great thing for the companies that provide the services as long as they acknowledge it and embrace it. If you have a business model that in part relies upon your customers being misinformed, or let's just say incompletely informed, you'd better start working on changing your business model.
So that's something what I like very much. I especially like it, and I have to say this in a real estate meeting, that I say, you know, that's also something what I'm missing still in the real estate industry. It's the customer focus. If you be here in the MIPIM, of course, there's a lot of talk, and it's a working fair, a very good one, but there's still a lot of effort, you know, making a lot of noise about the services instead of focusing on the services. That's also a message I want to give also to the real estate industry, that they also have to flip and look more towards the customer, what is actually the customer demand, and that will also help, you know, to deliver what is required on the market. And that's in contrary to the quote what I said from Ford. So that's the interesting thing. If you go to BMW, and this is on their website, so it sounds always unbelievable if you hear it, but if you go to 7 BMW 7 series, you can actually have them in a quadrillion, that's an unbelievable figure, in a quadrillion different configurations. Of course, it's a mathematical scheme that you say if you have the letter, and then you have a CD player, and you have something else with some other tools, then you're coming up to this figure. But it just shows you that it's very important that the customer wants to have an individual car, and he doesn't want to have something what is only for the mass. And that's also the change. The new purpose of commerce is to provide the tools, platforms, and the relationship to enable individuals, and I think that's the most important part, to live the lives as they like to choose it. So I heard this very restrictive here with the time. I'm seeing this is running, so it's very difficult to talk about the fulfillment strategy in 20 minutes. I try. So if you go into the e-delivery, what is actually changing for real estate and for the supply chain? You see that the difference is basically, and I left some other slides out. So if you see this, then it's basically from the producer, we get deliveries directly to the fulfillment centers. In old models, you would see always a distribution center in there. And I very often get asked the question, what is the difference between fulfillment center and distribution centers? I guess we will talk about it later. But the main difference is the distribution center was more cross-docking, and it was only on the market to deliver to the shops. So this was actually high volume quantities delivered on pallets to the shop. What we do now from the fulfillment center is actually that we have both together. We get stuff sometimes even directly from the manufacturers, and we get it from the some distribution centers, but there is no place in between. So the fulfillment center is actually the shop of our customer order point, what is the internet. So there's a direct connection that you have. The fulfillment center is acting as the shop, so to say. Then, of course, we have the parcel hubs, which are very important because the delivery to the customer, that's the reason why they're ordering this stuff. They want to have it. The best is actually to have it in the time they want it and at the place they want to have it. And that's why you need the parcel hubs and the customer. Sometimes we even have co-locations that we have already in some of our new fulfillment centers directly from the fulfillment center conveyor belts into the parcel hubs. And if you see the difference about for fulfillment centers, so the important part is really that the fulfillment center is built always with the close to the customer model in mind. And that's also a huge shift if you compare it with the old distribution centers or the old logistic buildings of the past. Then you always had them close to a highway junction. There was not much requirement for people, and it was not close to the customer, rather far away from the customers. That's what I said before. The FCs will ship individual customer shipments instead of large pallet size quantities. And direct order fulfillment, and that's a very important part, because if you go around and we are looking for vacant buildings sometimes or speculative buildings, you see very often buildings which are just not suitable for us. That's a standard building. There's no question. It has been successful over a long time, but it doesn't work for us. Why does it not work for us? Because the biggest issue is that it's much more sophisticated. You have material handling systems which are much more sophisticated. You have people. We have in our peak season in our buildings up to 5,000 to 6,000 people in the building, what is a huge challenge, because you need all the toilet facilities, you need the canteen facilities, and it's a completely different setup than you have with an old distribution center. And then if you talk about location, it's of course you can have a lot of algorithms and intelligence behind, but if you see this, and it's also a good link to the CEE region, if you just see the map Europe by night, and then you see how dense Europe basically is, and if you look into locations, then you can almost in a simple way say where the lightest the buildings have to be. That's very important, because that's where the customers are, and that's where we actually, of course, with some other intelligence behind. But if you look where we have our FCs, they are almost always close to the light. And if you see this, it's also interesting from CEE. If you see how much CEE is even included in this area, we always talk about it's a new region. But if you see the light here, it is already a very dense area, and it's also the heart of Europe. So that's the reason why we have also chosen CEE for 5. So we're doing one of the biggest expansion this year in CEE, doing actually 3 buildings in Poland and 2 buildings in Czech Republic. Here you can see where we're going to have them. So there's 2 in Wrocław, and 1 in Poznan, and we have already 1 customer return center in Prague, and we will also add a fulfillment center in Prague and another one close to Brno. And if you talk about location, because that's maybe the expectations, to see how do our buildings look like. So that's so the evolutions over the period. So we had the very first one on the left side, on the down on the left side, is our fulfillment center in Marston Gate in the UK. It was one of our first fulfillment centers we had in Europe. It's a Prologis building. So, and then we started, actually, if you go diagonal to the right, then you see the H-shaped building, as we call it. So that was our European generation. And now we are shifting again to the, on the left, on the top left side, what is the new, it's in America, in the US. It's a new building. And you may ask the question, what is changing? And the biggest shift is actually what I told you before, is about the people that we have to have the parking lots close to the building. We need more entrances, because just managing the flow of the people requires that you have two or three entrances also for the peak time. And that was the reason why we shifted everything on a one-sided building, where we had a cross-docking before. And that's it's really about the people, because we want to provide the best environment for our people. That they find everything they need, and they can actually get into the building and out of the building in the fastest time possible. That's just something. People, that's really the biggest thing we have to talk about our staff. We have to think about how can we make it easier for them. Oops. And that's also when you see it from the inside. Again, something to demonstrate. This has not much to do with an old fulfillment, with an old distribution centers, or they're here during the MIPIM. Usually I mentioned this in my presentation, saying here we have the famous Shedmasters, what is the biggest UK logistic fair. And that's, for me, always a good example how it is still perceived. You know, what is a shed has nothing to do with a shed. So this is something completely different. It's a high sophisticated building. We have air conditioning systems in the building. We have the power for our material handling system, so the requirements are much higher, and you can see it's looking much more shiny. You have conveyor belts, you have tow transportation, so that's the difference. And then the link, actually, you have seen the picture already. I started with this presentation, with the Hamburg port buildings and about multi-level, and if somebody is asking me what will be the biggest change in the future, that I'm 100% sure, as you see here, the one building from Goodman in Hong Kong, I've taken this as an example. What is a logistic building is not a office block or something. So that height will be definitely a topic. I know some people don't like it, and investors are still hesitant, but I'm 100% sure the only way with the land constraint we have in Europe is actually to go into the height, and that's the reason why I think multi-level, maybe not like in Hong Kong, but four or five levels will become normal. Okay, I'm very proud. I made it almost just with 1 minute longer. Thank you for your time, and of course I'm open for any questions if you have them.
Thank you very much, Raymond. I think it raised some questions which you would like to touch upon as we speak. Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. My name is Agnieszka Stankiewicz. I'm a partner and the head of real estate practice in Warsaw office of Norton Rose Fulbright. Max Andreessen, the true internet visionary and founder of Netscape back in the 90s, and also one of the well-known internet investor, said in fall 2011 that software is going to eat the world. And truly, we have seen industry after industry being eaten by software, and or at least fundamentally changing because of the internet challenge. This internet challenge is now increasingly forcing us in the real estate sector to reevaluate how we adopt to it and how we embrace it, and also how we reshape our bricks and mortar so that it will thrive in the future as well, rather than be consumed by the clicks. So, and this actually affects all segments of real estate, both office and warehouse, and perhaps more than the retail. And to discuss this very truly strategic question, we have succeeded today in assembling for you an illustrious panel of industry experts. And Mr. Raymond, you know, and gentlemen, if I may ask you to briefly introduce yourself and also explain what is your area of responsibility in your organization.
Robert Dobrzycki, Panattoni Europe, partner for Europe. We are lucky to be part of Amazon expansion.
My name is Otis Spencer. I'm with Peakside Capital, based in Warsaw, Poland. And we are observing as a landlord and how the digital age is changing the way that we do business. And so I'm here to learn something.
Hi, Alan Cahoon from DTZ, based in Warsaw, head of CEE. An interesting topic for us. We're in the course of opening our own shared service center in the region, but wasn't supposed to tell you that actually, but there you go, I just did.
Yeah, hello everybody. I'm Gerhard Dunstheimer, Deputy CEO of ECE, based in Hamburg. ECE is a family-owned company owned by the family Otto. You know, we have a sister group, the mail order group, Otto Group, so we are number two regarding e-commerce after your favorable company all over the world. So, and ECE is focusing mainly on shopping centers. We are also doing some offices and logistics and so on. We run almost 200 malls all over Europe, 18 countries, and if I look at this, so I'm maybe the old-fashioned guy because we still believe in bricks and mortar, and we believe in stationary retail. Maybe I can explain you later on why we do this.
Well, Gerhard, I didn't think you're that old-fashioned. You've got some splendid socks on. So
I tried to keep up with the shoes of yesterday, but it did not work out. And
not to worry. Hi, I'm Hadley Dean. I'm the managing partner of Eastern Europe for Colliers.
Mr. President, you know. So there was supposed to be a quote from the recent Guardian article on the screen, which says that more and more people are complaining about the distribution efficiency of the e-commerce. And I think that's the starting point of our discussion. Gerhard, if I can ask you to give your perspective, as you say that you believe in brick and mortar, how can retailers and retail owners can actually be partners and can use the deficiency in distribution right now being affecting e-commerce?
Yeah, so first of all, it's not only that we believe in brick and mortar, just to give you three examples, three recent examples. In the last 12 months, we started three new shopping malls in Germany, total investment volume 750 million. Million euros. So we just recently announced a new start of new construction in Poland in Bydgoszcz. We bought last year also in Poland. Mr. Zedner, thank you. One existing mall in Katowice. We just recently bought a new one in Poznan. And maybe you heard it on the press. We also invested today in a shopping center company in Brazil. So we still believe in brick and mortar. Why do we do this? It's not, and you know, as I said, I'm working for the family now for 15 years, and the philosophy of the family is a really long-lasting perspective. And therefore, we also, it's not that we say, okay, we will survive only today or tomorrow. We also will survive after tomorrow. I'm really convinced about this. The challenge, and therefore I really like the quote that you brought from Jeff Bezos is it's all about change. And therefore I think it's what we are really lacking, and not only the real estate is lacking, but also I have to admit the retailers are lacking, is we need a mental change really to accept the change that is coming up. And there is only the only opportunity that we have is to adapt our own behavior. So therefore, for me, change is the new equilibrium in the future. But there, we still have to go a long way. But I think, and you know, the audience that is coming to this place right now, and all of you, for me, this gives me the conviction that it really makes sense to do stationary retail also in the future. Why? Because it would have been much easier for you that Richard and Agnes Wittrens form this this whole discussion to a video conference, and you can sit at your office desk at home. You don't have to travel to Cannes. It's a long way. You don't have to pay the high prices for the low prices for the hotels and so on. But why are you coming here? Because we are all human beings, and I really believe in the,
why
in the social
are we here?
Community.
Are you mad? Vitamin D in the wine.
So what is the change, Alan, if you could get, what is the change that the retailers and retail owner will have to
I was just going
to
mention something about offices. The quick point about offices I wanted to make was that the so-called Silicon Roundabout at the Old Street in London, where all the Generation Y people are congregating, and it's exactly as you said, they're all human beings, they all like to hang out together in the same place. And actually, that's driven office demand in that part of London. I think the area around Silicon Roundabout, Old Street, Clerkenwell, what's it called? Hoxted? No, the part, anyway, begins with H and has an X in it. But that area of London has seen a huge increase in office demand. So I think all the gloom mongers who are going to assume that there'll be less office space, it's actually the other way around. And when the Generation Y lot take over, I hope I'm not old enough, because I really want to wear jeans and sneakers to work.
Okay, so what do you think is the change? Is that the office and the retail will be a destination place rather than... because it's true for the retail, but the office, it's quite a new idea. Otis, any views on this?
No, I mean, I would just say that the office is providing a work environment. And so even though people can telecommute, people still want to come into the office for the social interaction that we're talking about, why people come together. They want to meet, share ideas, and you can do it online, but yet you still want to come in and talk to your colleagues, see what's going on. So for office owners, it's important that you have the right amenities, that you have buildings that are near value generators, such as, let's say, a university, if we're talking about BPOs, or near a shopping center, so you create that right kind of work environment. And I think the biggest challenge that we're facing as an owner of somewhat older buildings is, what's the cost benefit? How do you upgrade these buildings and make them where they are competitive right now? You can't change the floor plate, but you can change other aspects to make an attractive work environment for the most important thing to business, that being the human capital.
So what do you think makes the office attractive for Generation Y? Andy, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, why do people get together? I mean, it's you know, in an office, you're not there, you're not processing. You're not, let's say, in your warehouse, you're getting something from A to B and to the customer. In an office, it's all about creativity. So you're not, how creative are you at home by yourself? You can do a research report, you can get documents done, but if you actually want to bounce ideas around, which is the Y generation want to do, they want to do it in teams. They want to collaborate. So that's why offices will never fade.
Even if you think about the lines of communication we have right now, the high speed of the internet with the cloud computing, with actually the fact that you can communicate from every place in the world.
Yep, but that's not a problem, and that's the great way to work, is that you don't have to lug around a big bag with all your files. You don't have to worry about, this is my desk, this is my work area. You're plug and play wherever you go, and that facilitates in terms of the business going to different places.
Yeah, but that's actually is the opposite principle, because what you were saying is actually that this may drive the office demand, the demand for office space down. Because the first thing is that people want to meet and share the ideas, but they can do it over internet as well. You know, look at Facebook and all the internet, all the social networks.
But all the studies done on the Y generation is when they want to be in a, when they're being creative, which should be 70% of the time, particularly for, let's say, programmers and sort of people in the IT sort of sector, they want to be in an office space. They do not want to be doing this remotely, because they're not getting the feedback, they're not getting the interaction.
Okay, still staying on the office and how this affects what the tenants want. Is there any specific, how this affects the current, the existing offices? Because I understand that the Generation Y will ask for the windows to open, to have much more amenities, the bicycle room, whatever it is that they require. So how does this affect the current office buildings?
Well, you just need, with the new buildings, you have that flexibility at the design stage to make buildings that are more friendly for the tenants, but the bigger challenge is for the existing stock. And what is the cost benefit of doing that? Because rents, because you improve the building to have the bike racks, to get it green certified and make all these changes, does not instantly translate into higher rents. So it's a market balance, let's say.
Yeah, if we talk about office, let's talk about BPO for a moment. And the prices, the rent levels, which the BPO expect, because they need more space, they would expect lower rents. But coming again to the Generation Y question, they would need a more green space and more sophisticated space. How you can really make it work?
You can. I mean, people are doing it right now. Because it's green, it can translate into lower overall occupancy costs, right? So there's different ways that you can go about making that space work with the daylight, with the amenities that people want. And then in terms of rental prices, you just need to be realistic with your expectations, what you're trying to achieve. And the thing with the BPOs, at least in Poland, BPOs, it's a growing area. And we as Peakside, we still see that growth into the future because we have the human capital element available in Poland. And so for offices, you need to make sure that you're near public transportation, that you've got other things. Because remember, too, for these people, they're not just working 9 to 5. They may be 24-hour shifts going in there. So they want the place. They want to come in and have, I don't want to say a home feeling, but they want to make sure the right amenities are there. Food, shower, whatever, entertainment. So you just got to adapt.
Coming back to retail maybe and the issue of partnership of online commerce and the offline shops, how do you think, and maybe that's the question to Raymond, do you think that the e-commerce may be a partner to the brick and mortar or it's a threat?
So first of all, I have to say I'm not Mr. Digital here and saying, you know, everything will be in the internet in the future. We also have our offices still in London location, in Luxembourg, a huge office where we have it in Berlin. We were the first ones doing a customer service center, not in the outskirts. We really did it in Berlin City because we know that people want to have this office space. And of course, also my presentation was also not, you know, we as Jeff used to say, we do not have this conqueror mentality. We are not here to say, you know, we are going out and destroy retail or something. That's not our mission. You know, we are pretty good in serving the customers. We are really focused on the customer. That's something where we are really good in, I think. And, of course, there's a reaction on the market that people appreciate what we are delivering. In regards of partnership, I'm sure that there will be partnership, whether it's with us, probably not, because we are a big player, and I said in the moment we are focusing on the e-commerce, what we are good in, but what I said applies also for multi-channel and everything. So it's, I think that there will be a reaction that some of the retailers, they have to do both, and as here the colleague said, he's the ECE group is also with the Otto group, so they have both sectors, basically. And so there will be for sure cooperation or collaboration between retail and e-commerce and delivery.
Hadi, what do you think? Is there will retailers use the current platforms to move online and then use the existing real estate stock to improve on delivery and convenience? Like Macy's in States, they have opened an in-shop online. So you can research online and then do the touch and feel and then you can pick up in shops. What's your view?
So I think, you know, I mean, Gerd, just jump in whenever you feel appropriate. But I think the retailing has always changed. Ever since there was a shop. You know, 40 years ago, you'd go to a shop and you'd go to a man or a lady behind a counter and said, I'd like a pair of underpants. And she would go off and get you a pair of underpants and then come back. 30 years ago, you then go into a shop and you'd have thousands of underpants. You know, you'd go and choose them, which is lucky for me. But now we're going into a different stage of retailing. It's just that simple. And of course, bricks and mortar will be needed. We recognise there will be some change. The question is, no one really knows. So e-retailing, what Amazon do, you know, is going to change retailing somehow. And it's what I think, and again, Raymond, maybe you could sort of jump in on this too, is that The general belief is we're going to start recognizing the change in traditional retailing once same-day deliveries start happening. Because that's the you go to a shopping center to get the experience and pick up something that day. So once same-day deliveries happens where you actually wake up in the morning and say, I want that, and you can have it at your house 4 hours later, it will change traditional bricks and mortar retail.
I think they're just different requirements. And again, and that was the reason why I showed the quotes from Jeff. I think it's all about the customer. And that's really, we call ourselves the most customer-centric company on earth. And that's really, that's we live it. So there's every time we're working, you know, backwards to the, starting with the customer and work backwards. And we have a generation, you know, they maybe like to be in vibrant areas, in the office areas, but at the same time, they maybe don't have time to buy, you know, with the times they're provided to go to the shop. So they go to the internet, but at the same time, over the weekend, they maybe want to go in a shopping mall and enjoy, you know, to see and touch stuff and go for a coffee and the cinema complex, whatever is the new setup for this kind. And the important part is really to see what the customer wants, and you have to react what the customer wants. You cannot do, it's exactly what Jeff said, you cannot have a business model is not working towards the customer, and that's the key. And with all the, you know, the social media and everything, and the connection of internet, you have to create opportunity to link with the customer all the time. You can actually feel what do the customer want, you know, what is the tendency, and that's something what you're going to do.
I definitely agree with Ryan and Sandy. You have to focus on the customer. It's an easy saying because retailers, they say we did this already for a long, long time. So I think, you know, I don't fear the change. So the only thing that changed really is the speed of the change. You know, what Hadley said, you know, retail was always about change. I'm in the industry now for 15 years. I still remember the time when we had a bookstore. We had at a typical shopping mall, we had two bookstores, size 150 square meters each. Then they were growing up to 2,500 square meters a bookstore. Now they are back on 300 square meters. So what does this mean? You know, our philosophy about a shopping mall is it's a platform and it has to be flexible. We have to adapt, and we have to adapt faster than we did in the past. We have to for example, we increased the percentage of gastronomy at a typical shopping mall 10 years ago was around 2%. Today it's already 10%. And my guess is that's an increasing number. Therefore, you have a real estate building which is flexible to adapt to these needs. And also, maybe an answer, Agnes, to the question, is it a threat or should we cooperate? We definitely have to cooperate. But this is the main challenge, you know. What I mentioned, our sister company, or the Otto Group, is number two in the market. So the advantage of Amazon was you build up the company from scratch with the right mentality already in the heads of your people. It's much more difficult to transfer a traditional business model into a modern digital oriented business a business model, and this is really the challenge that we are still have to solve also with the retailers. Because I have to admit, most, or not most, but a lot of the retailers, they are still sitting there and saying, "Yeah, there is e-commerce out there, but I did this." I did my business model now for 10 years, for 15 years, and I would do nothing. But I think that's wrong. Do you know what we do? I always get the question, Gerhard, what do you think? What is retail about in 2025? I say, I don't know. I really don't know. But what I know is it will be different from today. Okay, but what is the answer to this, or the consequence out of this? It's really that we say, okay, we have to trial and error, and that's what we are doing. We really transformed a couple of our shopping malls into a laboratory where we said, okay, come on, let's do trial and error.
I think inevitably for retailers, the costs are somehow going to go up because of all this new technology, and the question is, are the landlords going to pay for it, or are the retailers going to pay? So whether it's you know, more sophisticated management and accounting systems, the retailers are trying to figure out what proportion of my shoppers have looked online and come in to buy, or vice versa. You know, I bought a whole bunch of appliances online, having gone to a shop to look at them all. and then, you know, comparative shopped online and just ordered them online. So, I think that the retailers are now trying to get their heads around that and understand it. Other new products are coming out. There's one being developed in Poland that retailers may wish, or even landlords perhaps, should consider installing them for retailers in their malls. Have you heard of these? There's a company in Krakow, and they're small wireless transmitters, so as you walk around the shop, it sends news of a special offer onto your smartphone when you're in the shop. And so who would pay for that? Would the retailer want to buy it? Should the landlord pay? So I think there are some challenges.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I just can't tell you what we are doing, you know, because 2 years ago we also had the same situation. You know, someone was approaching us and told us, "Hey, Gerhard, I created a great app. This can do this and that and so on, and this appliance or that appliance." You know what we did? I called a group of people within my organization, and we were sitting together analyzing the business model of this guy and saying, "Oh yeah, maybe it will work out. Oh, I'm not quite sure. What is the investment plan for the next 5 years? Okay, initial investment is X, Y, Z, and then what's the payback period and so on." And you know what happened? We were discussing each of these ideas for 3 months. Okay, and within the 3 months, we already got another proposal, sake of other proposals. And we said, okay, it does not work this way. You know what we did? We transformed a couple of our shopping malls to digital laboratories, where we provided a lot of digital equipment and all this stuff. If you approach ECE today with a great idea, something like that, and we think, okay, it's worth to follow it, what we do? We invite the guy and tell him, okay, come on, you should do this at the mall XYZ. Just test it. And for 3 months, we pay for it for the first for the initial investment. And if it works out, we roll it out to all our malls. And that's what I'm saying. Okay, we don't know what world will be, but really try and do a trial and error method. And that's what we are going for. But what I said at the beginning is we need a mental change, and the mental change, unfortunately, is not there already with most of the retailers.
There is, sorry.
Just one thing from my side, maybe it didn't come over in the presentation when speaking about change. For me, the important part was more focused on the logistic industry, so the real estate logistic industry, or the thing, because I think that's the biggest change that you say. The front end is something that's maybe not going to change. So that's pretty clear that there will be an internet platform where customers going to buy, and there will be some sort of shops, you know, whether shopping mall or is the high street locations in London or anything. But what is actually happening in the upstream world? And that's something, what it was one small sentence, that actually, you know, the way we purchase things is also changing how the supply chains are managed in the future. And that's that you need a different setup. And some of the retailers are struggling to set up because they want to do direct order fulfillment out of a normal distribution center, what is not possible somehow. It is very difficult. And that's just the message also for the investors and the logistic guys in here. So there will be different, there will be no one suits all solution anymore. You have to look in different asset classes.
Yeah, and that's the question to Robert I had, is that because, you know, hearing what Raymond said about what is required from warehouses, I mean, they're not warehouses, they're fulfillment points, which is a new term. How this affects the development process and the investment process and the development profits?
Just before you answer that question, if you'd actually turned up on time, you'd have been speaking on the panel a lot earlier.
Sorry for that.
Don't worry. Yeah, I'm not so worried. Yeah, I mean, clearly, one is clear from what we discussed. I mean, I was a bit less emotional so far because the clear kind of upside is being created on the industrial side. I mean, not sure if it's coming out of retail, if it's coming out of the kind of another asset class, but the industrial asset class is definitely a gainer in this game. And as you discussed, obviously, there is a new wave of demand coming from e-commerce. And this is a kind of a refreshing wave. And the whole idea about customer focus is really right now, with e-commerce really playing even a kind of a larger role into our business. I mean, development-wise, that's one thing. You have to be really adjusting to what's going on and be kind of a reflecting what the customer need, but also investment-wise. Clearly, this is a new asset class which is being created, and some investors would say that this is a pretty specific building, but this is a new standard also. Standard going forward, if e-commerce is growing, share of e-commerce is growing year by year, this is going to be more and more a standard building. On the other hand, it's easier to turn this fulfillment center into multi-let building in 15 years' time than turn kind of a standard multi-let building into fulfillment center. So what's standard, what's not, that's another question. And clearly, I mean, we are extremely excited by development of Amazon and e-commerce. I mean, this is any change is great for a real estate developer, industrial real estate developer, especially private that can react quickly to what's going on. So from that perspective, we are extremely excited of the change.
But Robert, are you seeing larger warehouses being in demand, or a combination of larger and smaller sort of distribution, local sort of city distribution points?
Yeah, obviously, piece of the demand is coming from large fulfillment centers, which are kind of a 50,000 square meters plus. And the ones that we are developing for Amazon in Poland and in Czech are 100,000 square meters. But there is also a new asset class being created, which are kind of a cross-dock facilities, right? And there is another demand kind of coming from companies like DHL, DPD, which are looking for these facilities to serve Amazon. And this also is becoming a separate asset class from investment point of view on the real estate market, which creates another volume, another business, and it's great for the market, for the industrial real estate market.
But just to be clear, though, what would be the definition of, like, say, a functioning obsolete warehouse building? Is it the load factor per floor? Is the clear height? How would you define a building that's, like, outside the spectrum?
Well, if you could take a look at the building that we are developing right now for Amazon, and if you can imagine that this building could be a multi-let building, I would say this is a new standard going forward, because you can turn this building into a standard multi-let shed. Obviously, probably office content is a bit accumulated in one place, that's a loss, you have to underwrite this, but kind of the building would have to be used, you have to adjust this building into a standard shed. So obviously the height, the floor are not so much different. Mm-hmm. Obviously what's different is this is a bit more labor consuming business, so a bit more air conditioning installations and are needed, but yeah, this is something to underwrite.
But that's again, customer-focused. And that's something what drives me really crazy sometimes, you know, that you see. I had a conversation on a social media with one big investor firm, and he said something in an article that there will be a big clash because they see more high demand, you know, the customers demand the XXL warehouses or the fulfillment centers, but at the same time, investors don't like them. And I came back straight away and said, you know, what is it? If there is a demand, then if there's a customer, there's a demand, and there's also a market for it. So what are you talking about? And that's just something, and again, it would be also wrong if everyone goes out now and say, you know, we're building a XXL fulfillment center. What the market has a tendency to do is that, you know, XXL is the only thing to do it. It's one asset class, but there's a second one there, the cross-docking facilities for the transportation hubs, because the transportation, the carriers, they have to build hubs as well. So DHL is expanding in the UK, they're making more cross-docking facilities just to deal with the increasing demand. And that's really the focus also what I meant also with real estate, listen to the customer and see what they need. And of course there's always for the investors a judgment, is it something what is special, what is the market share of this kind of special product? But don't say if the customer wants it, say, you know, this is not a customer, it's not a market product.
Yeah, but just to be clear on that, if you're talking about this multi-level warehouse, I've seen that in Asia, like in Japan, and you should point out the example in Hong Kong, but when are you, Robert, going to develop multi-story in Warsaw, let's say? I mean,
well, probably in Warsaw it doesn't make sense because there is some land.
That's
but
the point.
In the UK, yeah. Right? Yeah. I mean,
yeah. Or Germany somewhere, yeah.
It is for certain markets. I'm not saying it will be everywhere. It's again something, you know, if you have an urban area and it's very difficult to get land, and that's something, you know, coming. It's also with our U.S. colleagues, sometimes they don't see that everything is a little bit denser here. You don't have unconstrained land, and then you have to be creative, and that's the reason why they have started in Asia, and I think there will be some metropolitan areas where land is very expensive and very there's a shortage. They will go multi-level and going into the height.
But have you seen any in Europe to date? I haven't seen any, but have you seen any in Europe?
I think there's one in the U.K., but this was an older project, but I think it will come soon because there is a demand or is a request to do this.
what we're seeing, actually, what we're talking about, is that there's a huge amount of change in logistics, there's a lot of change in offices, there's a lot of change in retail, and as an industry, we are a very, very traditional industry. I mean, your point is well valid. And this is a time, I think, for our industry is actually to shut up and listen to the customer. What do they want from us from an office? What do they want from logistics? What do they want from what are customers going into your shopping centers want? So I will shut up.
Okay, I think that we have some time for questions now. From the audience? Is there any question to the gentleman on the panel? Oh, sorry.
Thank you. Michael Kruger from Hillabad. Otis, you mentioned that features of the logistics and everything. I mean, we talk about the digital revolution. Is there also sort of a revolution in terms of the layout of logistics facilities? We have a lot of, say, warehouses all over the countries, the markets. Logistics is not logistics, as we all know. And since there are a number of reputable developers and managers on the stage, I would just like to know, do we see any change coming with that? So from distribution to a fulfillment center, I like the expression. Is that doing some difference, or how can the facilities be used for either of this, or will we also see on the real estate side some sort of a change, or, well, not maybe revolution, but development? That is my question.
I will defer to Robert on that one.
Right. I mean, what we see is we see two trends, and obviously there is a new demand from companies like Amazon and DHLs, which are demanding large fulfillment centers and smaller cross-docks to serve these fulfillment centers. But also we see that many of our customers, retailers, are using pieces of the warehouses they are having with us and replacing the shelves by the internet business. So they try to use the same warehouses. Question if it's the most efficient scenario going forward long term, that's another question. So far, they are trying to use the same resources. At some point of time, they might be looking at some additional efficiencies and could be following Amazon. And this is a bit of kind of obviously a question mark if the old warehouses would be kind of extremely usable long term. And simply, I'm not sure at that stage.
So I also feel to answer this question. So of course, one thing is there's not only retail out. So there's something we should not forget in the logistic market. So there's a lot of manufacturers using warehouses, using distribution systems. So it doesn't mean retail is dictating everything, and that will be the change from a logistic real estate perspective. But if you ask the question from the difference between distribution and fulfillment center, there's a huge difference. It's maybe if you see the box now coming back to the American model is also quite like a shoebox, as we call them sometimes. It's a quite normal thing, but what you have inside is completely different. And just see old-time logistics. If you go to one of the old logistic buildings at distribution centers, you maybe have something like maximum 300 people working in the building. Most of them are forklift drivers. You have some people doing commissioning, but it's very limited. So there is sometimes you even don't, if we, with our growth, we are sometimes going around and looking for existing vacant buildings. But, most of them, they would be so expensive to convert them because there's not even heating in. Sometimes it's just, that there's anti-freezing or something, that nothing happens. And that's the main thing, just the toilet facilities or restroom facilities. As you see, if you have 5,000 people in peak in three shifts, of course, but having up to 2,000 or 1,600 people in one shift in the building, you need all the toilet facilities, you need the canteen. And again, people have a right, that they don't have to wait 45 minutes to get in and out of the building. So you try everything. And it's a huge challenge on the learning for us because, this is also something what is evolving, the number of people we have in the building. But from our perspective, is a huge difference between fulfillment center and distribution center. And I agree with Robert, you can easily convert a fulfillment center into a distribution center than the other way around.
So does it mean that the existing logistics will basically disappear, the existing portfolio?
As Raymond mentioned, I mean, obviously retailers are not the only users, right? They are also
logistic providers to manufacturers. That's one thing. But also, it is not completely impossible to turn kind of a standard logistics shed into kind of an e-commerce facility. I mean, you have to invest a bit more money, but you can install additional kind of a heating system, air conditioning system. It is possible. It is obviously CapEx intensive, but possible, right? So there will be adjustment, definitely, but also there are other users. So the whole stock is obviously changing and adjusting, and obviously from real estate development company point of view, that's an opportunity. From investors' point of view, it's a probably challenge long-term, kind of how to adjust to the changes.
Yeah, it's not so much functional obsolescence where you can't do something with it, but what we've seen in like in the U.S., depending where that warehouse facility is in the proximity to the path of growth of the city, you can create what we call flex space, so putting a higher office component, taking that up to 30 to 50% and convert it some way into some other alternative use. So you have to be somewhat flexible in terms of what that future product is.
Okay. Okay, then, gentlemen.
Taufik Savongi, Jones and Nassal. Actually, it's not a question, but something maybe related to the discussion of the panel, specifically now CEE, in terms of the future of the offices, maybe retail. One thing we have been analyzing, and I think it's very important, are demographics. If we look at the labor force, which will be coming over the next 10 to 15 years, it's at least half of what it is today. So actually the whole philosophy of how we build offices today or retail is to be able to attract that working force and make our building, our offices more attractive than our competitors because we want to employ the people. Because the next challenge will be to find enough people to employ and we all agree that it is all about people at the end of the day. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much to our panelists, Robert, Otis, Alan, Gerhard, and Hadley, and to our keynote speaker, Raymond, and also to our moderator, Agnieszka. We're going to take a little tea break now. I just want to give a writing comment on that. I wasn't particularly surprised that it tended to be heavily weighted and focused on industrial, because definitely that's a very exciting area stimulated by the digital revolution. But I think also in the other asset classes, it's all about the toolbox that the building owners and that the tenants will bring to the table. Going back to the founder of Amazon's, Jeff Bezos' comment, that it's not just about the things that will change. It's important to focus on the things that won't change and exploit those to advantage as well. And I think we're going to see that across the board. And in the next panel, we're much more focused on the money side of the question, how this is going to influence investment trends, portfolio balances going forward. Obviously, we're going to hear a lot more about how attractive industrial is going to be. But we've also got to think very long term. Maybe there's going to be a surge in that area. It's going to create some imbalances somewhere else. But maybe that's going to ride back again. And we'll hear the thoughts of another panel of very strong leaders in the business. So thank you very much. Enjoy your tea break. Back in 20 minutes, 15 minutes.